going to be our final talk for today's session. This will be low-cost side-channel attacks on smartphones and embedded devices using software-defined radios. I think this is going to be awesome. The presenter is Gabriel Goller, and he's from GND, GmbH of Germany.
Thank you. So the basic idea of this side-channel attack, which I will present to you, was to test a device under test, which could be a smartphone or an embedded computer or any other device specifically, then capture the emanations of this device when it's processing some cryptographic algorithms using a sensor, like, for example, this far-field antenna. Then capture that signal with a radio receiver, translating it into the digital domain by a software-defined radio, and use signal processing to analyze the signal. So when we started, we didn't really know what kind of emanations come out of a smartphone, so we basically used a very high-end system to evaluate all the emanations coming out of it. This is kind of difficult because when you use a far-field antenna, you have lots of noise because you are in the range of hundreds of megahertz, maybe even gigahertz, where we have all kinds of radio transmissions which you just capture with the antenna, and then so it's not possible to simply plug this sensor into an oscilloscope and look at the results, but you have to first filter the signal. We did this using a very high-end radio receiver, which you can see here. Then we digitized the signal with a software-defined radio and used this laptop that you can see here to further process the signal. Later on, we found out that you can supplement this whole system by a self-built antenna and just a DVB-T stick for €20 on eBay. But I'll come to that later. So on the software side, on the laptop, we had a GNU Radio to process and record the data. GNU Radio is a software where you can just put in different blocks used for signal processing and then, for example, filter the signal that's coming from the software-defined radio and store it in a file or whatever you want. Because it was not possible to just see or mount a successful attack from the recorded data, we had to do some offline post-processing, which was done using Octave, which is an open-source MATLAB clone. On the device under test, you, of course, need some algorithms that run so that you can attack something. We used asymmetric cryptography, which basically is an RSA implementation. This algorithm that you can see here is a simple square and multiply algorithm, which is, as I said, used in RSA. And it basically does this calculation that you can see here. So it uses a ciphertext and calculates the message from it using this equation. If you take a look at the algorithm, you can quickly see that the algorithm functions like this. It takes a look at the private key D and looks at each bit of this private key. And if the bit is a 0, it only does a square operation. And if the bit is 1, it also does a multiply operation. So if it is possible to distinguish between the square operation and the multiply operation, you can quickly read the private key just from the signal that you recorded. Hardware-wise, we use this smartphone here, which has a shielding plate mounted on top of the processor. We removed that shielding plate because it would just have maybe shielded the emanations of the device, and since we didn't know if there are any emanations, we didn't want to make the task harder than it really had to be. We also tested other devices. I'll come to that later. All of these devices were based on an ARM architecture. The operating system was sometimes Android or sometimes Linux, but basically those systems are kind of similar, so we could use the same code on both systems. Now, as I said, finding emanations is kind of hard because there are so much different signals on the different frequencies at which you can find the emanations of such devices. So you have several possibilities to find a signal of the smartphone. The hardest way is to just use the radio receiver and just turn the knob of the frequency and then try to manually find out if there is a signal emanating or not, which is kind of hard, and you don't want to do that for many weeks, because which you would have to do because there is a large frequency spectrum. So what we basically did was to just do two measurements, one without the device and one with the device, and the theory was that if you then subtract these both measurements, you can find out which measurements were there in the one, which signals were there in one measurement and which signals were there in the other. So this way we found several spikes which should suggest that there is a leakage coming from the smartphone. However, most of these spikes were just false positives. However, there were certain emanations coming from the device. Most of these emanations, however, came from the display. So this is also a really nice result, but it wasn't the focus of the research that we did. For example, you could see a cursor blinking from 3 meters distance, which is also some kind of side channel attack, because maybe you could then relate to the display content and find out what is displayed on the display, but it wasn't the focus of this research, so we didn't continue that way. Another way to find frequencies is to just place a near-field probe on the device and then use an oscilloscope to record data while the algorithm is running and then look at the frequency of the signal coming out. So basically, what we did here was to fix the CPU frequency at 900 megahertz and then record the signal. And as you can see here, there is a high spike at 900 megahertz, which suggests that the near-field probe was able to find a signal here at 900 megahertz. Later on, we found out that this same signal could be also seen with the far-field antenna. If you turn it to 900 megahertz, you will basically get some signal as you can see it here. So since the algorithm is running in an endless loop, you see these different blocks. And each of these blocks is just one execution of the algorithm. Now, what we had to do is to find out whether you can distinguish between a square and a multiply operations to mount a successful side channel attack. However, the noise was so high that this was not possible. But we didn't give up and used a trick from signal processing, and that is also the offline processing that I mentioned earlier. We just took multiple of these blocks and computed the average signal from these multiple blocks. And what you can see then is that if you look at the result, is that there are several spikes in the signal. And some of these spikes are really narrow, and the other ones are broader. And since I didn't know the key that I programmed into that algorithm, I could quickly see that this corresponds to the key. So the broader blocks are the ones, and the smaller blocks are the zeros. So you basically can read out the key from multiple traces. To find out how many traces we need for doing this, we used a little trick since we didn't have an algorithm that would just use the signal and then return the key to us and tell us how many curves he needed. Where we knew that 500 traces were enough to see the key visually. And what we then did was to compute the correlation between this average curve of 500 traces and an average curve of I traces. And using this correlation, you can see how much the curves look alike. And what we then found out is that with 170 traces, we already get a correlation of 0.999, which is quite high. And thus, it should be possible to see the key with only 170 traces. And if you look at the average of 170 traces, you can also clearly see the key. Now, another evaluation that we did was the maximum distance of the whole attack. As you can see here, you can measure the signal up to a distance of 1.5 meters. However, it is very hard to then synchronize the blocks and compute the average, which means that you won't be able to extract the keys from such a distance without synchronizing the signal, and then it is not really why would you go 1.5 meters away and then use a cable to synchronize the signal with to synchronize the blocks? So, however, it was possible to extract the key from up to a distance of 80 centimeters, but the number of blocks that you needed just exploded. So, where we needed before 170 traces, we now need 1,900 traces, and even then, it's an art in itself to extract the key. If you look at this blue curve, you can maybe see it if you compare it to the curve from a nearer distance, and then you can read the key. But you can argue if it is still possible from 80 centimeters. If you put the shielding plate in, I normally would have said it is not possible to mount the attack because the shielding plate shields away all the emanations. However, it was still possible. The effect was kind of the same, like to increase the distance, but it was not that you couldn't mount the attack anymore. What we saw when we used the same correlation is that with a factor of 1.6, so we need 1.6 more curves than without the shielding plate, you still could get the keys get to a correlation of 0.999. As I said, then we found out that you could also use a DVB-T stick to do the same attack. As you can see here, we have a very good signal, and as it turned out, the signal-to-noise ratio decreased a bit because, of course, the software-defined radio within this DVB-T stick is much, much worse than the one in the high-end setup. However, with only twice as much traces as before, we could still extract the key. We did this with many devices. We had three smartphones. I relied on my colleagues to give them their Android smartphones to me and then try to mount the attack. I found out that with all of these devices, it was possible to mount the attack by simply turning the frequency to the fixed CPU frequency. Sometimes you had to remove a shielding plate, sometimes it was even possible without the shielding plate. And it was possible also on single board computers, specifically Raspberry Pi and the BeagleBone, which used, as I said, Android and Linux. We also tested if the smartphone emits signals when disassembled, so without a display, without any other components, simply the battery and the main processor, and it still emitted the signal, so we really think that it comes out of the processor. Another thing you can do is to not use such a big antenna system, which is kind of not hard to notice. If you go to someone and try to extract their key by using this antenna and going nearer than 80 centimeters to him, I think you might notice something. So what you can also do is use this kind of near field probe and then try to find a signal. If we tested it and found a wideband signal emanated at frequencies near 35 megahertz. And as it turned out, these different signals were emanated depending on the CPU clock, and different signals were could be seen. Now in this signal you can't really see it, but if you, for example, turn the CPU clock to 1400 megahertz, which was the maximum clock frequency, maybe you can see in the signal that there are some spikes that are higher than other ones. So this is a single block, no post-processing. You can simply see that when you turn on the recording system. And now if you zoom in, you will see that some of these spikes are higher than the others, as I said, and this corresponds again to the square and multiply operations. So here you can see from a simple power analysis that the key. You have a square and multiply, which is a 1. You have a square that's a 0, then a square again that's a 0, square and multiply that's a 1, and so on. This was possible for almost all frequencies on this smartphone. We didn't check it for other devices, but why shouldn't it be possible there? Maybe it's a design problem. The only frequencies at which it was not possible were at the lower frequencies. So I would say that probably the CPU frequency is coupled with some capacitors or something like that on the device, and this only works at higher frequencies. As a rule of thumb, we could say that the higher the CPU clock speed, the better the signal was that we received. To summarize all of this, you can say that side-channel analysis on embedded devices and smartphones is really feasible using standard radio equipment. You can put up an experimental setup for less than 30 euros, which is, I guess, pretty unprecedented. A private key can, with a high-end setup, be extracted with only 170 traces. It is possible to do this attack on multiple devices, which kind of gives the hope that this is a problem which is not specific for a single device, but which is just inherent in the device design. And also that you can do an even cheaper attack mounted from a closer distance using a near-field probe. What I want to do now, I hope it will work, is to do a short demo of this setup. Basically, we have two demos, the far-field setup and the near-field setup. For the far-field setup, since the post-processing is kind of boring to visualize, I just inserted into the algorithm a sleep function, which results in a drop of the amplitude. So you can see basically from a single trace where the ones or the zeros are by again having broader and smaller blocks, which kind of corresponds also the averaging that we used, but just without the averaging. For the near field setup, you will directly see the square and multiply function without any sleeps. So I'm trying to that it turns off now, but but maybe we will get at least one of the demos. It turned off soon. Yeah. Do you have the? basically tune in to the right frequency. And we zoom a bit out. Now I'll start the algorithm on the smartphone. And put it before the antenna. And now, after a short moment, yes, we should see the signal as promised. Let me put it a bit more here. And now, when we zoom a bit in, you can already see it, that there are these smaller blocks and the larger blocks, and here you can directly read the private key that I was using. So again, this is a 1, a 0, a 1, a 0, 0, 1, and so on. Now, the second demo, using this near field probe, and again, a DVB-T stick. For this, I changed the algorithm so it doesn't use the sleeps and turn on the demo. So let's zoom out again. And now if I put it on the right spot, that's there we need to find the right spot on the device to find the emanation, but normally it should be here. Start the system. You can see some small signal, but it's really, really distorted. Yeah, this works better. That's my second near field antenna. It's just a paper clip put into this same loop. So that's even more low cost than the other device if you don't have any near field probes at home. So here, if you put it on the right spot, you can see what I just showed earlier. And now if I try to zoom in a bit, you can see these high spikes and the smaller spikes, and you can see that there is a difference which is clearly visible, and you can see the, again, square multiply, so we have the same key as before, which is 1 0 1 0 0 1 0 1 and so on. So, if you have any questions, you can ask them now.
Do you think with different antennas in game you could do this in a couple of years?
I don't personally think so, because this already is kind of one of the better antennas. It is specifically made for the 900 megahertz band, which you can do by adapting this length. And it also has this shield, which kind of reflects the signal going back. So this is already a very good antenna, and the signal is very, very small. I know that Cryptography Research a few years ago had a demo where they were able to do such an attack from several meters of distance. But as far as I know, that was an emanation coming out of maybe the display or some high-powered device, and it was only possible to do it on one device, whereas this attack works on almost all devices that I checked, but with the downside that it really does not work for distances much further away.
Yes. So I know some vendors have started to build HSMs into their devices. Is that an effective defense against an attack like this? Have you tried that at all?
Like a shielding plate or something? Yes, I think it is, because this, at least the attack with the far field antenna, does only work because we have such high frequencies, and the crypto coprocessors, mostly all of them work at smaller frequencies, and when you have a smaller frequency, the size of the antenna increases, and you can't build such a antenna for example 100 megahertz or 40 or 50 megahertz. So I guess that a coprocessor still is better. However, using such a near field probe can still break a coprocessor if it's done bad, because if it's not strengthened against side channel attacks, then it probably will leak. I cannot generalize that, but you have to be aware of such things, maybe even